Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Sunday from 7 a.m., 7 p.m., and 1 a.m. Monday mornings. Hope that you will join us. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are having a return guest that I haven't talked with in 5 years, so we're going to find out what developments have taken place with none other than the Venus Project, with the founder, the visionary, the architect, if you will. We have Jacques Fresco all the way from Florida. And thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
I consider it a privilege. Thank you, Richard.
I am very curious as to getting an update from you on where the Venus Project is. Granted, it's been 5 years. I haven't seen a great deal of news coverage of changes as we talked the first time. So I'm really curious as to where we are today.
Well, we have many more members than we've had in the past. And Roxanne, can you describe that?
Richard, do you want to introduce both of us so we could both be on here?
Oh, absolutely. Roxanne, that's not a problem at all. And it is Roxanne Meadows is joining Jacques Fresco with our program today on the Venus Project. And Roxanne, why don't you fill us in on some of the things that have taken place over the last, at least as far as my reference points are, for the last 5 years?
Okay, be glad to do that. So in 2010, Jacques and I did a world lecture tour. We went to about 20 countries and gave about 26 well-received lectures. Jacques was a rock star, it seemed like, because there were 3 documentaries made about the Venus Project, and a couple of them went viral, and they are on Netflix now. Since then, we have a pretty well-formed organization where we have points of contacts in about 40 different countries, and that is growing quickly. We have a lot of volunteers from all over the world who have organized different teams, and you can see this on our website under thevenusproject.com and get involved. We have the music team and the media team, and about every 2 hours, there's a social media team that's putting up something on our Facebook, the Venus Project Global, in regards to news or information and other things, and posters. People do some beautiful posters. We have a great Venus Project magazine from volunteers as well, and that's very well received, some wonderful information to introduce people to this direction, and a lot of other things.
Well, I'm looking at, actually, I'm a subscriber to Netflix, and I'm actually looking there now. And, of course, I was actually seeing maybe all three of the documentaries available also on YouTube as well. I have always been attracted to the kind of futuristic designs and drawings, the paintings and so forth, and programs that take a look at where our civilization could be if we really wanted to be. And yet at the same time, I know, Jacques, you're not a pessimist, but you are a realist when it comes to discussing the subject of our future civilization. Are you still optimistic that, you know, there's still the possibility we may not destroy ourselves and maybe we'll have a future as you envision it?
And that depends on how many people begin to operate and think this way. I can't say for sure. I don't control people. We just recommend a direction to be taken to avoid war, unemployment, and most of the poverty and lack of medical care that people are not getting. And the pollution, of course, of the environment. We're moving toward additional destruction of the environment. And I'm very much ashamed of the behavior of most Americans. They don't seem to concern themselves with the destruction of the environment.
I know that where I live with my wife, we live in a rural part of Santa Barbara County above on the mountain tops above Santa Barbara. And my philosophy has always been, what if I lived below me? Would I do what I'm about to do? Let's just say I'm going to drain my radiator or I'm going to drain my oil pan. Just let it run down the hill. Would I do that if I lived below me? And the answer always, of course, is no, I wouldn't do that. So that's my mindset when it comes to those kinds of things. And trying to utilize more biodegradable this and that, and basically trying to do my part in my small little corner of the world. But I have to raise this question to you, Jacques, that I've actually put to many of our guests in the past. Do you, I guess, first of all, this may or may not even be a question for you, but do you feel man has earned the right or deserves the right to continue on as a species? I'm not talking about going about the process of annihilating humanity because we've made the decision. No, we don't. But maybe there comes a point where we say, no more babies. This is the end of this is the last year we're going to have kids. And then at 70 or 80 years down the road, when those kids are gone, that's it for the human race, because we've just done such a poor job of stewardship of the planet.
I agree with you, Richard.
So you feel that maybe we don't deserve the right to continue on?
Well, it isn't that. I think most people don't know what's happening. They really are not aware of that. They're concerned with their own self-centered interests.
Hmm. When you, first of all, I'd like to go back in history a little bit. When did you begin this, I'll call it a crusade. When did the Venus Project, even before maybe it was given a name, when did that start to germinate within you?
That was in 1929, during the last big depression that we had. That made me quite aware of conditions around the world. It's not just happening in America. It's happening all over the world. People are dissatisfied. They're losing confidence in their directors. Politicians don't seem to know the answers. As a kid, I asked a lot of politicians. I said, if you're elected, how will you prevent war? They said, I don't know. There's always been war. There'll always be war. I said, how can you grow more food to feed the world's hungry? Most politicians that I asked that question said, I don't know. That's not my field. I said, what do you know? If you're elected, how can you make the world a better place if you don't have the answers to these questions? And they said, well, they couldn't answer me. So I don't have much faith in competition or politicians making decisions. They make a lot of decisions without investigating.
I would agree.
They call it human nature. I went to some outlying islands to find out whether human nature is inherited or learned. And when I got to the island of Tuamotu, which is about 300 miles east of Tahiti, and I found out that the people there, the boys and girls, were swimming nude when they were children, and the adults wore no clothing. It was tropical, and there were no peeping Toms on the island because everybody walked around nude anyway. So there were no peeping Toms. I went into the majority of people's huts, and there were no pictures of nude women. And when the man talked to a woman, they wore no clothing. They looked at the eyes of the female. They did not look at her body. And they were not brought up to want to touch particular parts of the body. They were brought up to like the whole person, everything about them. And I found those people very, very cooperative and very decent without education.
Your observation is that this what they call human nature, is not natural. It is learned.
That's what I believe. I believe that all behavior, all human behavior, every word is given you by your mother, cup, table, papa, mama, every word over and over again until you speak English. And the English language was developed hundreds of years ago, and it's no longer adequate. It seems to me that we don't teach people how to communicate. We give them words that have no referent, completely fabricated. Politicians make laws, but they don't base the laws on statistical evidence. They just make laws, which it means that you'll never get out of your problems if you use the same methods over and over again that produce the conditions in the first place.
Yeah, I've heard that quote many times, as a matter of fact, and it is without a doubt. And I'd have to say that even I freely admit that even I, from time to time, find it difficult to maintain that we'll call it higher consciousness of selflessness, if you will, of being more concerned about an outcome as it reflects on others than just, well, what am I going to gain from this? What's in it for me kind of thing? Yes. But I think that slowly but surely, as you say, we can't control what other people think or do, but we certainly can have an impact and an influence. I think, as you said earlier, we can at least kind of put the model out there for them to observe.
You, Richard, use the term higher consciousness, and I used to use that term, but it seems to me that we're only conscious of our receptors. In other words, we can't see radio waves moving through the room, so we're not aware of that. We can't see, bacteria on the table without a microscope. So we can only be as conscious as our receptors. Do you understand how I mean that?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Where our senses...
Attention, people that say, I believe in higher consciousness. Mm-hmm. I believe we're only as conscious as our receptors and no more. And we need a lot, great deal more of knowledge to be what you call conscious.
Where would you place our intuition or listening to that still small voice in that category?
That's wishful thinking. People would like to see the world made better, and they'd like to see people behave better to one another, but they don't know how to attain that. They don't know what to do about it. Even in Egypt, they want to get rid of the government. If they do get rid of their government, what will they put in place? They don't have any ideas. So I'm afraid of change, which goes nowhere in particular. It has to be specific. When you change a country, we have to change our values and the way we get to think about things. If you're brought up in a decent, in the South, in an uneducated region, you tend to become a member of the Ku Klux Klan. There used to be 2 million members to 3 million members in the United States of the Ku Klux Klan. And that is not based on statistical data. It's based on feelings, which are erroneous.
Mm-hmm. And yet we all have that want, that need, that desire to belong, to be a part of. But our current system, if I'm understanding you, is not fostering a sense of togetherness. Let's just take our electoral, our process of electing officials. If you have 51% who have elected the person, then there's 49% of the people who basically they have no voice because the person that they were voting for wasn't elected.
Right.
So now you've just disenfranchised a little less than half the population that voted. So more and more people don't vote, more and more people don't participate, and more people just grumble along and complain and so forth because they don't see that there's anything in it for them, if you will. I mean, we're right kind of back to what you started with. So I'm curious as to what you have found as the a method, maybe not the best, but at least a method for being more inclusive, drawing people more into it's up to us. It's all of us or none kind of thing. We've got to do this together.
I agree with you, Richard. Most people are not informed properly. They're given propaganda, not information. And they need more information as to what's going on in the world, not propaganda. And that's what we're getting, more propaganda and less information.
Is there a source you're aware of where we might be able to get the information rather than the propaganda?
The internet is the greatest thing that ever happened. At least there's information on the internet. but there's no information on any newscast. All the news is slanted toward the wars. And I'm very much concerned with killing people. I think soldiers are really killing machines. They're not told the details, or they're given lies about one another. I think that the Republicans lie about the Democrats. The Democrats lie about the Republicans. And they both lie to the public. And this is not the way to run a country. You can't manage a civilization with propaganda. It has to be based upon actual occurrences.
Let's talk about the Venus Project specifically. Can you run down for us the basic, I'll call them tenets, if you will, or principles by which you have sort of built this this new civilization, this civilization of the future? I don't want to use the word utopia because that's not what it is.
Right. There's no such thing as utopia. That means that you've reached the top. We never reach the top. There are no final frontiers. There will be continuous change. You cannot design the ideal city because 10 years from now, there'll be changes. There will always be changes. So as long as you understand that the environment is under constant change, that's the only constant that I can say counts.
So what about the aspects, the other principles that underlie the Venus Project and the ways in which we would live and work and play, how we would govern ourselves, how we would heat our homes and light them and have our factories, if we actually had factories as we do today? Can you share with us some of that, the infrastructure, if you will?
Yes, I can. I tell you that the only way to prevent war is to declare all the Earth's resources as a common heritage of all the world's people. After all, where do we get this land? We stole it from the Indians. They say the sun never sets on England. Where did England get all that land? They took it by force and violence. It seems that all nations work by force and violence. All nations are loaded with propaganda, and they give their people that kind of propaganda. Be proud to be an American. You want to be proud to be a member of the human race, and you don't want separate boundaries. You don't want separate borders. You have to do away with all the artificial borders that separate people. You have to teach a common language that has no, that is not subject to interpretation. When you read the Bible, somebody says, this is what Jesus meant. Another person says, no, this is what he meant. The third person says, you're both wrong. This is what he meant.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have that, you have a language that's subject to interpretation, it's very difficult to get a point across. Whenever you hear a speech, you interpret it. But this does not occur in the scientific world. In the scientific world, when a scientist talks about metal, he tells you what's in that metal, what its compression strength, what its torsional strength, and he gives you information. He doesn't say it's a nice day. It's 72 degrees, he says. He doesn't talk about he met a very nice person. We don't know what the hell that means.
Mm-hmm. So what about the monetary system and the new economy, if that's the right term to use? My question of late has basically been, who said that this was the only way that it had to be? Because it certainly isn't equitable for all the people. There's no question about that. And then, of course, the question comes up, well, what would you suggest? Well, I didn't study economy, so I don't have a suggestion. All I know is this can't be the only way.
There's another way. It's called a resource-based economy. In other words, instead of basing our economy on money, you can pay off people with money. You can pay off senators. You can pay off lawyers. You can sell drugs. But if you do away with the money system, I know that that's something you're not used to thinking. But the public library is what I'm thinking about. When you go to the public library, you can take out quite a number of books and you don't have to pay any money. And the more you make available to everybody, the less probability of crime. If people have access to the necessities of life, they do not commit crime. They only do when they don't have access. Paper proclamations are not true. They tell you that you have equal opportunity. Your opportunity is based on your purchasing power. If you don't have purchasing power, you can't afford surgery. And if you can't afford surgery, the word freedom has no meaning at all. What does the word mean? It means that you have less purchasing power. And if you have insufficient purchasing power, you can't afford medical care. So what good is the word freedom if you don't have that?
In terms of this resource-based economy, if we want to put it in those terms, who is going to be responsible for the continual
management?
Well, not just the management, but even going back to the production of the resources. In other words, the gathering up, not just of the food, but also of the energy source again, or sources. To keep the lights on and allow us to move from place to place and so forth.
We have to do what big business is doing. They're automating. The more automation you put in, the better it is. They used to have 3,000 people working in automobile factories. Today it's just about 800. And they're doing away with people in factories. And the more people that get laid off, the less purchasing power they're going to have. There's an equation that states that the more severe the depression, the higher the crime rate. So crime is based upon lack of approach, lack of availability of the necessities of life. This is what makes crime. And if you make things available, next door to the public library, we have a camera center where any American can check out a camera, or any person in any country can check out a camera. And next to the camera center, we have musical instruments, saxophone, banjo, all kinds of musical instruments which are available on checkout, just like the public library. Everything will work just like the public library. When people have access to the necessities of life, they do not sell drugs. They do not engage in crime, because crime is a result of deprivation. Scarcity. Mm-hmm. We design products to wear out and break down today. And that's not sane. That's not sane at all. We should design products to get the maximum wear. We don't need things to break down. And we have engineers today that literally design things to wear out and break down after the warranty runs out.
I would like to ask you, Roxanne, if you could share with us a little bit about your integration into the Venus Project. How long have you been involved, and what was it that drew you to this project?
Well, I've been involved for about 38 years, and when I first heard Jacques lecture, it made more sense to me than anything I'd ever heard, because people talk about how we need peace and brotherhood and love and well-being and no war, but they have no, it's an emotional appeal, but they have no methodology of how to achieve it. And Jacques' work that he did all his life since he was about 13 was to present a methodology of how to eliminate the problems that we have and to pinpoint where the sources of these problems come from, which is the monetary system that we live under. You know, all social designs, all social systems train their children to uphold the system that they live under and give them words such as patriotism and democracy and
equal rights.
Yeah, equal rights, to try and get them to fall in line with the system that they have. And the jobs that they give them are to uphold that system. So it's very hard for people to understand anything different. They're given trigger words for, you know, centralization or, you know, any type of organized society or planned society. But if we don't organize where we're going in the future, we're going to repeat the same problems that we have, and that seems to be what we're doing. People are beginning to talk about how technology is displacing people and jobs today, and once they displace enough, people won't have the purchasing power to buy the goods turned out, but they don't know what to do after that. And that's where the Venus Project comes in, and a resource-based economy. We have enough goods and services. We have enough technology, especially today, to create abundance for everyone all over the earth if we organize our resources wisely.
Now, I want to go back to you, Jacques, for a moment, because we've talked about a couple of aspects of this, the Venus Project and this new civilization. And I'm curious as to the governmental structure. What will that look like from your perspective?
Well, I see an automated government, a high-tech government. In other words, if automation can run an automobile plant or any other factory, it surely should be able to manage government. I think that human beings louse up governments. I don't see how anything managed by human beings will not bring out the worst qualities of human beings. I see an automated government with electronics connected to agriculture and goes into the soil. If the water table drops, that pumps water out there, not people. You don't need people to tell the president that we're having a shortage of water. And the president flies over and he says, you know, you're right. So what? What if you show that to politicians? They can't do anything about it. So if you automate it, meaning connect intelligent machines to all aspects of the environment to make sure that our constitutional rights are enforced, not people. Hmm. People can say all kinds of things. When they're elected, they do what they have to do.
They serve their donors. The politicians don't really serve the well-being of people. They serve those who put them in.
I'm curious, too, Jacques, you have a couple of works out. I'm just having to peruse here. Looking Forward, and then also The Best That Money Can't Buy. That's going back to 2002. The earlier one is 1969. And I raised a question, and this ties into what I want to talk to you about. I raised this question to my father when he turned 70. My father is still alive. He's 83 years old. And you yourself are about to celebrate your 99th birthday here shortly.
Yes.
And I asked him, I said, Dad, what's it feel like to be 70? To which I'll share with you his response. He said very briefly, well, I didn't expect to live this long, but I'm glad I'm here. Do you share those sentiments at the age of almost 99?
Yes, I do.
And why do you feel that way?
Because I can participate in the change or help or try to participate in the change that's necessary for people to survive. I feel sorry for most people that they don't seem to have information. They have propaganda. And I want to see what I can do to help bring out more information to more people. And I do that every day I'm alive.
You know, every Saturday, Jacques still lectures. People come from all around the world to our center in Venus, Florida. Jacques can't travel as much, so people come here, and Jacques lectures for several hours on the weekends. And we're doing new documentaries. Part one and two of a new documentary will come out in about a month now. We're working on a major motion picture, so he's still designing and inventing and working on things.
I noticed, too, that it says here that you, Jacques, are self-taught, and yet you've worked in some very interesting areas in your earlier years, and so I'm just curious as to, do you feel that your formal education was a benefit to you or maybe a hindrance compared to the things you have learned since then?
I think it's a hindrance. I think formal education teaches people that they're born that way, that they're gifted. If they look at an artist, if a teacher looks at an artist and says, you're very talented, I don't know what that means. Or you're gifted, what does that mean? An artist has to learn how to draw. He's not gifted. He's not gifted anything. If you live in the South, you pick up an attitude toward the black people. The attitude is ingrained in the South. in uneducated regions of the South, and there they pick up their prejudices and their preferences. People seem to reflect their environment and nothing more. I once asked an American Indian, if you can have anything you want, what would it be? He said, I like a good straight javelin. He can't ask for a Mercedes. He can't ask for things he's never heard of, mm-hmm. a twin-engine Beechcraft. He can only ask for things he's heard of. And people seem to reflect their environment. They don't seem to know anything else outside of their environment. And if you don't take my word for it, check it out. Ask people questions. What's the greatest country in the world? Said the good old USA. But they don't ask in what area the French support the arts. The French government supports the arts. We don't support the arts as much. So, in other words, you have to ask, in what area is the nation superior? They don't have free discussion on television. You can't tell people that other people are having an affair. You say that they're having an affair. I've been to over 1,000 restrooms. I never found a place to rest in any restroom. I don't know what they're talking about when they talk about freedom and democracy. When an Arab comes to this country with four wives, that's normal to that culture. We say you can only come in with one wife. You try to enforce your values on other people. If they speak a different language, you want them to speak your language and carry out things your way, and yet you talk of individuality. There's no such thing as individuality. If you had individuality in America, you'd have 50 political parties, not Democrats and Republicans. You'd have all kinds of viewpoints.
I'm curious as to the, because this ties into that in terms of differing viewpoints and beliefs, in terms of the religious expression of people in this new civilization.
Well, I asked Einstein when I was about 13 years old, I met him, and I said, do you believe in God? He said, which one? Then I said, well, do you believe in truth? He said, what do you mean by truth? And when I said, sir, a particular surface is smooth, he said, what do you mean by smooth? He wouldn't let me get away with words. He wanted me to describe what I meant. I said that the texture is very smooth to the eye. He says, not under a microscope, it's not smooth. And under magnification, it gets rougher. Yeah. So he says, what is it? I asked him, what are things really like? He said, we can't see things as they really are. We can only see things as our receptors pick them up. You can only hear sounds that you can hear, but a dog can hear much better than a human being. And many animals can hear other animals. And they, when they howl at the moon, they hear other dogs howling that you can't hear. So when you say man is the most developed being, not in hearing, not in picking up sound waves that are outside the range of their hearing. In other words, human beings have certain characteristics. And that's what you got to go by. Statistical data, not the opinions of people.
I'm curious as to the, maybe we can shift it to a broader perspective, because I certainly do understand both you and Einstein's position on the precise words to be used to describe something, which it seems as though the English language is a bit deficient in that level of specificity. I'm curious as to the spiritual aspects of our future civilization, and for that matter, even your if you claim to even have a spiritual life or a spiritual center of your own.
Yes, we believe that the Venus Project is the most spiritual project ever proposed. It doesn't abuse people. It has no war, it has no armies, no navies, no police, and no prisons. Man is conditioned to become disturbed. Man is conditioned to become a criminal. Of course, we don't know how, we never talk about it. We say some people are good, some people are bad. There's no right, no wrong, no good, no bad. These are human projections. If a man has access to the necessities of life, I mentioned this before, he doesn't steal or lie. When you deprive people of things, that's when crime goes up. When unemployment goes up, crime moves right up with it. That's a fact. It's not an opinion.
It seems like the word spirituality is bandied about a lot and is really just a word with no way of achieving it. It seems to be hopes and wishes of people in such a deprivation that they strive for something pure in a culture that seems to be so polluted. But I think the Venus Project lays out a methodology of how to achieve what people are talking about. It turns it into a working reality, something that is achievable, peace on earth, and no war, no poverty, no hunger.
If that isn't spiritual, I don't know what is.
So we're not talking about a spirituality that is based in or focused on necessarily a concept of a higher power or being, what have you, but more on how one lives one's life in service to and for humanity, if you will.
Well, I think that the man that invented the icebox was a pretty good man, but the refrigerator is better. The refrigerator, the iceman is unemployed today. He can't get a job. The elevator operator is unemployed. All elevators are automatic today. So I would say that the inventor of automation liberates human beings. But I would call all the factory members together and say, instead of working 8 hours a day, you now work 4 hours a day due to automation. I won't discharge them. I give them less and less time. And maybe 20 or 30 years from now, there'll be no more professions. It'll take an hour and a half to make a lawyer machine that tells you all about the law, just like your laptop. There'll be no lawyers. There'll be no businessmen. There'll be no advertising because it's socially offensive. All businessmen sell you things. You don't want to be sold things. You want to be told what the advantage of the thing is. We design things to wear out and break down. How can we be civilized? We're not civilized yet. As long as you have armies, navies, police, and prisons, you're not civilized. We are not civilized. No country is civilized. I can't tell you to go anywhere because there's no place on earth where people are civilized yet. Civilized meaning using statistical mechanics. In other words, do a survey of the Earth's resources. That tells you how many people we can support on Earth. If it's 7 billion and we go 8 billion, there's going to be starvation. You have to base your population density and your city density on available resources. There's no other system that works that way.
You know, one of the things about the resource-based economy and the Venus Project is that it uses the methods of science, not philosophy or religion. Those really don't really work to solve the problems that we have. They haven't, or politics. But when you put scientists on anything, they seem to come up with the answers. Unfortunately, science is prostituted today because they're used to make weapons of war and destruction, and that's what they do. They get a kick out of it instead of asking, what are we doing this for? You know, they're just specialized in certain aspects of science. But in the future, people will be multidisciplinarians. They know a lot about a lot of things, so they couldn't be used by other people in that way. But the Venus Project uses the methods of science applied to the way we live to enhance everybody's lifestyle and well-being and protect the environment.
There'd be no separate countries. All people need the same thing. They need clean air, clean water, and a relevant education. That's what people need. And all people get heart disease, cancer. We need a lot of research in those areas, and the problems that are common to all people. I would take all the soldiers and send them back to school to become problem solvers. We have a lot of unresolved problems. That's where we get into conflict. and we have to resolve those problems.
I know one of the suggestions that has been offered up is to bring, for example, as far as the U.S. is concerned, bring all of our troops home and put them to work rebuilding our infrastructure.
Yes, exactly.
You know, because they are still going to be paid regardless. So it's not like they're going to be added to the burden of unemployed. And now they're actually doing something to contribute to the overall well-being of our country, our civilization.
Yes, you're right. Richard, you know, when a man steals a watch worth $150, if it's his third crime, he may be put in jail for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
How many watches that cost? It's cheaper to give him a watch because you have to give him haircuts, clothing, eyeglasses, false teeth, and you take care of his health, too. So isn't it easier to guarantee an income to people if they've been replaced by a machine? Isn't it easier?
Absolutely easier. I know I would use this example after my first interview with you. I think I understood this fairly well in terms of resources, that I use the example of a small little USB flash drive, you know, things you plug into the USB port of a computer to store data on and so forth. And I'd say, well, in this new civilization, there'd be this store where you could go in and you could pick up. There's this bin. And you just go in and you'd pick up one of these little flash drives and you'd walk out and you'd use it. You wouldn't need to grab a handful because they're always going to be there. Then somebody walks up to you and demands that you give them your little flash drive, which, of course, you would give them gladly. But then you would say to them, but there's a store right down there where you can get one of your own anytime you want. You don't need to take it from me. And there is no crime because I'm giving this to this person. It's not being taken from me because I know there's an abundant supply of them.
Right.
So I don't have to be in fear. This individual doesn't have to be in a state of greed and feeling as though they have to have these things because there's more than enough to go around.
There's much more than enough to go around. If we use our resources intelligently, design our cities so that each building is not that different from one another. They're the best that we know how to turn out. All people have two eyes. You know, a doctor came to one of my sessions and he said, we have eyes to see with. That's not true. So I took him into a dark room. I said, see. He said, you have to turn your lights on. Then you can't see with your eyes. You need light to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is absolutely true. It's one of these, this is one of those subjects as far as finding those new ways of living that we have been searching for and will continue to through folks such as yourself. And we've been doing this very specifically and directly since 2007, certainly a brief span of time by comparison to what you've been dealing with and as far as the Venus Project. And our listeners can check out the Venus Project by going to that very website, thevenusproject.com. There are all kinds of resources. There are films on YouTube. For example, there's Welcome to the Future going back to 1998, Cities in the Sky, Self-Erecting Structures. I found that fascinating. I love watching those kinds of films. Designing the Future and Paradise or Oblivion. All of these are available on YouTube, and I'm sure they're probably also available, as you said, Roxanne, on Netflix as well. I know that there are a lot of movies that come out, especially when we transitioned into December of 2012, a lot of fear over this whole conversation around the Mayan calendar and the supposed end of the world. Well, if the world ended, I guess we didn't get the message. But the fact of the matter is that we have some serious choices to make, it sounds like, and that you're offering this, shall we say, this opportunity, if you will. I guess that's one way of putting it, for people to consider a different way. Are there prerequisites to being a member of this new civilization?
Yes.
And what are they?
When you want to talk to people, don't talk to the members. Talk to the leader of the group. And work. When people come here, all the people that I speak to, I say, when you leave here, if you don't talk to other people about this new value system, nothing new will happen. You have to go to work and do things. And it's the transition will be very dangerous and very rough. I'm surprised that I wasn't shot yet. But I think that once people talk to other people and learn how to talk to other people, to turn them around, change their way of thinking. For example, when I was first exposed to the Ku Klux Klan, the leader said to me, "You're a smart guy, Jock. What do you think of the Ku Klux Klan?" I said, "It's a great organization, but it doesn't go far enough." He said, "What do you mean?" I had a chance to talk to him, but if I attack, I lose. I break contact. So never attack another person. Never punch them. When you punch them and get into a fight, it doesn't change their thinking. Only information and education changes their thinking. So speak at your church, your clubhouse, wherever you're a member. Speak to people about this new way of thinking.
We don't really have a membership organization. We have a lot of people who work with us and volunteer, and we do have people that give others courses when they want to become a point of contact in their own area, which means that people who are interested in their area will get in touch with them, and they'll teach others about this direction. And so we welcome anybody's participation.
And they can participate by going to the website, thevenusproject.com. All kinds of resources and information there. And you can either type into Google, you can type in The Venus Project, you can type in Jock Fresco, Roxanne Meadows, or other related issues. One of the other things I wanted to talk to you about before we wrap up our interview here, Jacques, is in terms of the work that we will do, what will we do if everything is automated, governmentally as well as far as industrially, in terms of providing us with the things that we need? What will we do?
Instead of doing nothing, you go back to school, and there's lots of things you'd like to study, and you never get a PhD. You're always learning. You never finalize anything. There are no utopias. No perfect city, no perfect anything. Man has no limitations to what he can accomplish and do.
You know, there'll always be problems to that time and date in history, you know, even if it's in the future. People won't sit back and just do nothing, because education, all sorts of access to things, entertainment, but entertainment where you'd learn something as well, recreation, helping other people. But there'll always be need for problem solving.
Always.
And that's what people will be working on. What a fascinating thing in the future, or even just now, to have people in the sciences tackling the real problems on Earth. Those are the problems
that are same
to all of us, like heart disease, cystic fibrosis. We can all come down with those things. And those are the problems that we should be tackling, instead of fighting those over other nations over scarce resources. We have plenty of resources to take care of everyone's needs.
You know, Jacques, when we talked the first time, the thing that I gleaned from you, especially when talking about the resource-based economy and the fact that there would be no more debt, we wouldn't have these struggles with money, which seems to be one of the major factors and stressors that deteriorates our own physical health. It sounds to me like we're going to resolve a lot of these conditions, these syndromes and so forth, just by virtue of eliminating that stress alone.
Yes,
absolutely.
No question about it.
One of the questions, I have a series of three questions that I ask my guests at the end of the program, and we are fast approaching that time here. And I'm going to ask you, Jacques, first, and then I'll ask Roxanne to answer these questions in whatever way you choose. First question for you, Jacques. Who is Jacques Fresco?
Jacques Fresco is an independent individual who was changed by his grandfather. My grandfather told me that all countries were corrupt. He said people came from all over the world to America, and they brought the printing press, religion, philosophy, music, all the things. If you took Beethoven as a baby and dropped him off in China when he was a baby, he would not have written the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Don't you see? It's the environment that a person grows up in that sets his values. If you were brought up in England, in Oxford, you'd speak with an Oxford accent. If you were brought up in the South years ago, you'd speak with a Southern accent. There's no individuality. If you were individual, they couldn't control you. They make you all alike so they can control you. When war comes, everybody is a patriot. You don't have huge protests. You don't have as many protests as you have today. You'd have much more protests if people were well-informed. They're not well-informed. They're poorly informed. They're misinformed. And they get mad at people. They commit crime. They don't understand that the environment is mainly responsible for all human behavior.
A follow-up to that would be...
The white collar that pronounces a man and woman, I pronounce you man and wife. Who the hell is he? And if you don't get along, you go to a lawyer. He says, it costs you $2,000 to split it up. Where did he come from? The system is socially offensive, and it's against most human need. And as long as you have such a system, you're going to have human problems. I don't get mad at anybody. I understand where they're coming from. If I meet an Arab that has four wives, he says, that's all I can afford now. But maybe someday I'll be able to have 10 wives. If their culture is different, don't attack. Say, that's an interesting thing. But don't attack. Yeah. Go to work on them. Teach them the scientific method of thinking, how to keep water clean, how to take care of your environment, how to not set smoke into the air. A guy named Cottrell, about 80 years ago, developed the Cottrell process of precipitating smoke. And you can have these units in your smokestack. And all that comes out of a smokestack is warm air. No black smoke, no particles that affect the lungs of all people. And you couldn't buy cigarettes if the nation cared about the public health. Cigarettes are detrimental. They cause heart disease and cancer. It may take 10 or 20 years, but they're available because they tax it and the government gets a piece of the action. So the government doesn't appear to be interested in people. They have liquor available and they have cigarettes available. And they have many drugs available. There used to be a book called 100 Million Guinea Pigs. It was a bestseller in America. And that got the Pure Food and Drug Administration installed to check the claims of the drug companies. They make a lot of claims that aren't true. And when they began, they had the government put in an agency. It's called the Pure Food and Drug Administration. Now it's operated by the people that own the drug companies. They control everything now. The more control they get, the more prison people will be in.
Right.
The more restricted their behavior.
Do you consider yourself an individual in the context of what you shared with us a moment ago?
I would say more so. More so than other people. I still don't believe in marriage. I believe that people ought to live together. If they don't get along, they leave. They leave one another. But they don't have to go to a lawyer and have an out and have the children sent away with the mother or the father. I believe that children should be raised by people that love to work with children, that love to educate children. And children are not educated. They're brought up a certain way. And we have to get the parents to give up the notion that they can educate their children. Very few people are capable of educating their children. Mm-hmm. They don't know how.
Yeah.
They really don't know. If you have a boy and a girl, and you say to one of them, you go to a movie tonight, but you can't because you didn't do your homework. You make jealousy and envy. That's where it comes from. If you have two sons, say one is 7 years old and the other is 14 years old, and you play with a seven-year-old, you generate jealousy and envy in one of the children. You have to be very careful in raising children. You have to put the youngest child on your lap and the older child say, I love you both. You don't separate them by saying, you did your homework, you're going to grow up to be a lawyer, and you're not worth it. You're not as good as your older brother. When you start that, you scar people for life. In other words, before you have children, you have to go through a course to learn how to raise children and how to do away with jealousy and envy.
What is it that you hope to, in just a few words, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
To make the transition easier for people, to transition from a monetary system to a resource-based economy, to make it smoother. If you don't educate people, it's going to be very rough to change. A lot of fighting and name-calling, and I don't want that.
And who inspires you?
The people that are working toward the elimination of scarcity, and the people who are working toward improving human relations through knowledge. I'm against present-day psychologists and psychiatrists because they try to adjust you to this culture. And doing that is the worst thing you can do, is adjust people to this culture. Don't you see that's what psychologists do? To make you fit in? You don't want to fit in. You want a better society. You want a society under constant innovation.
Roxanne, to you, who is Roxanne Meadows?
Well, I would say all of my past experience from when I was a child, my parents, the people who I admired, my friends, the teachers. But I think I feel very lucky to have met Jacques. And I would say I learned most from Jacques that was relevant, gave me a platform to look at the world. And it really gave me something to work toward. First person to show a workable solution that I have found to the problems that we have. So, and understanding that it is the environment that shapes behavior. Some people get very upset about that and they think it's limiting people. But really, I think it liberates people, because if we understand that we can produce a society that brings out the best in people, that make them creative, understanding what makes people creative. It doesn't come from within. There's no talent within. That people can be taught how to be artists or anything else. They can be taught how to be creative. So if we design a society that enables people to be creative and learn more and become more knowledgeable in many different disciplines and be cooperative, it's an exciting venture. The best thing I can see to work toward. Otherwise, we're working toward really the banks in this culture. Or if you think you're working for yourself, you can save up hundreds of thousands of dollars, and if you can get cancer, and you can kiss it all goodbye. There is no security that I can find in this system that we live under.
And what would you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, I'd like to help promote this in any way that I can. And that's what I've been doing for the last 38 years and learned a lot with it as well. Through, if you look at the Venus Project website, you can see a lot of technical designs that Jacques spent all his life doing as well. He backed this up technically from transportation to total city systems, to cities in the sea. And we're trying to actually get some of those things built as well.
And who inspires you?
Well, I would say that I became mostly inspired through Jacques and his work, but it is extremely exhilarating to see other people who study this system and work at it with us, and that is extremely exciting.
I want to thank both of you for joining us here on the program. This has been most informative and enlightening. I hope that, Jacques, if it is your desire to continue on in this work, that you are given the wherewithal, both energetically within yourself, but also in terms of the resources necessary to help to maybe build some of these cities. I like I said, when I watch some of these movies, I am just, I'm blown away. It's like, well, why aren't we there now? Why, it seems to me like, you know, this is what I was promised as a child when I was watching cartoons.
There's a lot of work to be done.
Absolutely.
It's a privilege to be on your show.
Well, thank you very much. And I hope that we get a chance again in the near future to talk with you and further this discussion. And again, encourage people to go to thevenusproject.com and get involved in whatever ways are available to them. Watch some of these films, whether it be on YouTube or Netflix or whatever source. And then how soon do you think it will be before these this two-part documentary will be coming out?
Well, it will be a three-part documentary.
Three-part.
But the first two parts are coming out within a month. And we're working on the third part, which is going to be all about the Venus Project. And if you were blown away from the animations and the designs, Jack's designs, you should stay tuned for part three, which will probably be out maybe in about 5 or 6 months.
Well, very exciting. Very much looking forward to it. And again, thank you both for joining us on the program.
It's a real pleasure, Richard. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
And I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, love to love.